Good afternoon. Thanks for coming. My name is Patrick Moorhead, and I am the Manager of Research and Development for Avenue A Razorfish's Advanced Solutions Group in the U.S. For those of you that are not familiar with the agency, just a couple of pieces of data. We are currently ranked as the largest interactive media agency in the U.S. We have 12 offices domestically and now 8 abroad, with a total organization of 2,000 professionals and servicing Fortune 500 clientele on a global scale. Today, I'm going to try to cover all of this in 20 minutes because I think there's going to be a lot of questions. So I'm sure some of this stuff is going to fly right over, and you're going to be like, we should talk about that for like an hour, and I wish we could. I'm happy to spend time afterwards in the hallway talking with each and every one of you if I can. So what is the truth about mobile, and what does the future of personal devices look like for us in the U.S. in the next 18 to 24 months is what I am going to talk about. The truth about mobile is, I wonder if we're not all thinking about mobile in terms of marketing and media in the right way. So I'm going to propose that we talk about mobile or think about mobile in these two categories, in terms of audience and in terms of monetization of that audience through advertising. On the audience side, we'll set the stage by saying current data says we have about 250 million handset subscribers in the U.S., which represents close to 85% penetration of the total population of the United States. Among that audience, some obligatory data, year over year, huge growth in specifically data services, and data services is everything that's kind of outside of voice happening in and around the mobile phone. This is data furnished by our partner Telefia, which is a mobile research company that we work closely with. The numbers that are of note here are the Q406 numbers, particularly around SMS and WAP. So those percentages relate directly back to that 250 million handset user base, and I think that represents a pretty significant audience opportunity for media and marketing for this channel. Some more Telefia data that's compelling. Mobile video, I think, is considered to be kind of futuristic in the U.S., and I would argue that it's not so much, that it's here, it's growing exponentially. And, you know, again, Telefia data indicating a million subscriber growth just in Q4 of 06, resulting in 54 million subscribers downloading video at some point on their mobile phone by the end of last year. One thing to think about in that context is that number on the lower right-hand side, 154% growth over four quarters in 06. If that growth continues, I think the adoption of this technology is going to move a lot faster than many people in the content side and in the advertising side are thinking is possible. So in my opinion, the audience for mobile content and mobile marketing is very much there in the U.S., and it's there, it's ready for that to be a useful channel, and it's only going to get better. On the monetization side, not so much. What are the factors, and what do I mean when I say monetization? Monetization for us means ad opportunities and ad dollars in and around content. And services that are being consumed on the device. And there's some pretty big challenges there that are stunting the monetization growth of the mobile media and advertising channel on the whole. They have to do a lot with standardization. Right now, the mobile advertising landscape is very fragmented, and the more I talk about it, the more I feel like I'm talking about web media in 1995. There's not any standardization really around formats. There's no best practices around how to use data to market to consumers in an effective way that's going to make a difference for the advertiser and that's not going to piss off the consumer in the process. There's almost no standardization around measurement analytics for that advertising. So we don't have a very good sense about how effective it is to market on the mobile channel, or how we even should measure it, and what the correct use of the audience analytics data behind the scenes should be. That all combined with a severely fragmented buy-side ad marketplace, where there isn't a single source to reliably buy at scale across the existing inventory for web media, makes it very difficult for this channel to become a meaningful component in a multi-million dollar marketing mixture for a Fortune 500 client. And I think those challenges notwithstanding, part of what's happening there is we're not maybe thinking about mobile in the right way. I think my experience has been, particularly with my clients, that they tend to think of mobile as a channel among a landscape of a variety of channels that include living room video, broadband video, on-demand services, social media, and mobile seems to live in there. Instead, I wonder if mobile is a combination set of channels that just happen to be delivered over a single kind of device, and that consumers really have a palette of channels that they can configure on the mobile device based on their needs as a user and what they're trying to accomplish with the technology. The range of those combination sets is wide and various, from simple devices that are purely intended for a single use, such as the Jitterbug phone. How many people are familiar with this device? This is brand new. In the last couple of months in the U.S., you'll see it average. They're spending a lot of media money. People are calling it, and forgive me if I offend you, but they're calling it the old people phone. It's kind of the mobile phone equivalent of I've fallen and I can't get up. It has three buttons, one to call the operator, one to call 911, and one that you can program, presumably, to call your mom or your whoever. There's no memory. There's no video. There's no mobile web. There's no address book. There's no email browser. There's nothing. There's just what you see there, right? So very simple, single-purpose kind of device in mobile. And this should be familiar to this audience, I'm sure, which is the polar opposite of the Jitterbug phone, right? This is a completely converged, do-everything that you could ever want to do, packing every single channel into one device experience at once kind of play. So this maybe represents the whole spectrum of mobile opportunities, if we think of mobile as a kind of combination set where you mix and match different channels and functionalities, right? So what does that really mean for the future of personal devices in the U.S., I think is a hotly debated topic. And the debate has mostly centered around this line of thinking. Are we going to see convergent devices where more and more services and functionalities are packed into kind of one thing that you can easily carry around in your pocket? Or are we going to see a divergent track in consumer electronics devices where devices are specifically designed for certain goals? Music enthusiasts will carry the iPod plus a phone because they want a great music experience. And game enthusiasts will carry the PSP plus a phone because they want a great game experience, right? I don't think that's the right question. In fact, I wonder if maybe we should be thinking more in terms of overall proliferation of devices and kind of unique and ever-increasing fragmentation of specialization in devices. So what does that mean? It kind of is that times 300. I think we're approaching 800 or 900 different variations of handsets available in the U.S. across four major carriers, and then specialized handsets coming out from MVNOs kind of ongoing. So what are the factors here to kind of help us understand the trajectory? There are really four: battery, memory, camera, and screen. And those are the physical limitations that the consumer electronics industry is grappling with and trying to understand how to create devices that work in specialized ways around different combination sets of features. Speaking with folks at Motorola and at Nokia in Sweden, the battery life challenge is a very difficult one. We just simply do not currently have the physics that we need to pack enough juice into these small batteries to power hours and hours of multimedia experience on top of hours and hours of connectivity for background syncing email and browsing the web and powering video consumption and all of this stuff, right? The obvious problem with battery is on a convergent device, it's great that I can kind of listen to John Mayer on the subway on the way to work in New York, but what sucks is I have to charge up my phone when I get there if I want to do business that day because the battery's dead from the music experience, right? There isn't a lot of good news, unfortunately, on the battery front from the major CE manufacturers. I wish there was. So that's always going to be a challenge. Memory, on the other hand, continues to improve. We continue to see memory designers getting more and more memory out of smaller and smaller configurations, which is exciting. Similar in cameras, we're seeing increasing amounts of resolution packed into smaller and smaller lenses and increasing functionality around what you can do with that image data on the device, again, due to kind of the storage capacity and processor speed that they're building into handsets. Screen resolution is kind of where we run into another wall like batteries. The thing that's great about mobile and the reason that it's so widely adopted in the U.S. and abroad is the form factor, right? It's small and convenient, it's thin, it's nice to go out at night and throw your razor in the pocket of your jacket and not have to worry about it. So that's a default limitation. We can't make the screen really any bigger, so you can't get a higher resolution experience out of it. And obviously screen resolution is what it is. So that kind of gives you a picture of what these engineers and designers at Motorola and Samsung and Nokia are up against in the context of trying to design a range of devices that are going to offer a suite of choices to consumers who want to mix and match their particular feature set in the particular phone, right? So I think maybe we should think about mobile and devices and the future of devices, not in terms of convergence and divergence, but in terms of complements and substitutes for experiences of media that we have, right? And this is where consumers are going to vote ultimately about what kinds of experiences they want phones to substitute for and what types of experiences they want complements for. Let me give you a couple of examples. The music phone is a logical place to go. It basically looks like taking a best-of-breed music player and combining it with an advanced communications device that results in an easy-to-use form factor that gives you the best of both worlds, right? I admit that maybe the iPhone should be there instead of the rocker, but since no one's seen the iPhone yet, I thought maybe I'd use an example that actually existed. So this set seems to me a substitute, right? The screen resolution, the screen size on a music phone doesn't really matter. All you really need for a pretty good experience on a music phone is good battery life and good memory, right? So in essence, a music phone can be a substitute for the experience that you have out of two devices, right? And you can substitute one in their place. By contrast, let's look at the idea of a game phone, right? So taking the console game experience, adding a communications tool to it that results in something like what Samsung is getting ready to inflict upon us. Here, I think the game phone is not a substitute. I think it's a complement. There are going to be certain types of games that will be fun to play on that device or those kinds of devices for those people that are interested and enthusiastic about gaming. And they'll adopt that device. But you're never going to replace the core gaming experience that drives the industry, which is that console with the immersive screen and the big sound and the wireless connectivity that's broadband enabled, right, and the community aspects that everyone's enjoying about gaming. So the game phone as a mobile combination set, I think, is a complement to the core gaming experience as opposed to a substitute. Another example is the video phone, right? The highly anticipated video phone combining the broadcast television experience or the digital cable experience with a robust communication tool, resulting in this Samsung product. I promise you I don't work for Samsung. Nokia has a similar product that I saw at CES in January that they've released in Japan. And I think they're kind of getting ready to do that later this year in the U.S., where they have made the screen pivot so that you can kind of imitate a wide aspect video experience on the handset. So here again, is the video phone going to be is going to converge all of these different channels? No, I don't think so. I think the primary experience that everyone is going to still enjoy quite a bit is that big flat screen in the living room with the surround sound and in the dark with your popcorn on the couch. Instead, the video phone is going to be kind of a complement to that. Certain formats of video are going to work on the phone. Certain lengths, certain content is going to work on the phone very well. Others, not so much, right? And that's, you hear that a lot. Is somebody going to sit down and watch Lord of the Rings on the phone? No. Will they watch 2 minutes of behind-the-scenes interviews with Peter Jackson? Yeah, I think so, right? So that's a complementary experience to the living room video experience. So what does all that mean? What it means is, I think it's critical for those of us who are designing services for mobile, who are working in advertising in mobile and designing content in mobile, to think of mobile in the correct way, which is it's really many channels in one package, right? It can be a game channel. It can be a video channel. It can be a music channel. It can be a social networking channel or a community channel or a web channel. In some cases, like the iPhone, it could be potentially all of those, but that's not going to work for everybody, right? So thinking in terms of kind of configuring mobile as many channels in one, I think is maybe a valuable strategy. Also, acknowledging that I think the audience for mobile media and advertising is there today, that the numbers of people who have devices and are using devices for various things other than making and receiving calls is reaching scale right now in the U.S., and very soon I think it's going to be another mass channel, maybe the biggest mass channel that we have. Monetization is only going to come through standardization, and it's only going to come through the efforts of content owners, content designers, advertisers, and the brands that are funding these things, pushing for standardization of formats, standardization of the buy side of mobile business, best practices in marketing to consumers in a non offensive, non-intrusive manner that delivers value to the consumer and the advertiser at the same time. And the measurement analytics best practices behind the scenes that will make that valuable in an ROI model will help this channel or combination set of channels scale into a meaningful position in a multi-million dollar media mixture. Obviously, I think the consumers is largely going to drive channel behavior on the device. Consumers will have an unending myriad of choices of devices to buy based on the specific combination set of things they want to do with it and for their interests and their needs. And that, you know, this that landscape of devices is not about all arriving at one place in the pocket or carrying around 9 different ones. I think it's about what kinds of devices and services and media can we create that either complement existing media experiences or, where it makes sense, substitute for a suite of different devices and different experiences. So the bottom line of this presentation, then I'm happy to take questions, is I believe that mobile right now in the U.S. is one of the great empirical sciences. There is no reward for wait and see. There is only do now, learn, build the machinery that makes sense so that as this channel reaches scale, you're able to capitalize on it and deliver ultimately value to the people that want to use it, whether it's use it to access your content, access your brand, access their own material or their friends or whatever it is. And finally, I believe that we overestimate the growth cycle of adoption for mobile in the U.S. I think there's a tendency among content producers and particularly big brand advertisers to think of mobile as Five Guys doing this in New York, when in reality, I think the data clearly suggests that this channel is going to go prime time in the next 6 months. And I would fully imagine that with the introduction of the iPhone, as we roll into the beginning of 2008, the audience for mobile is going to be at scale and in possession of devices and combination sets of services and media that are going to make mobile a really compelling option for content producers and for marketers for reaching mass audiences. Thanks. Happy to take your questions. Yes, go ahead. Oh, yeah, we're podcasting this, so we need to do the questions on the microphone. For posterity.
Hello. Hello. All right. So you said the data usage was around 32%, I think, for the total mobile using population. That seems fairly low. I don't know. What are your thoughts on... it seems to be a number that, from what I've seen through like Forrester, it seems like a number that's kind of slowly growing. And just because they have data usage also doesn't mean that they're actually surfing the web or doing anything besides checking email or using like on-deck properties.
Okay. Do you have a question?
I don't know. Sometimes that seems like a low number. I mean, when people talk about spending money to make mobile properties or whatever, is it at a point where it's worth it? Where maybe you could be spending the money to make your web property that has a million users, or you could spend money to make your web property that has thousands of users.
Right.
Is it at a point you think where people should be spending the money?
You should give me the 5-minute warning. I think my position is. There's two ways to look at 32%. 32% of 240 million is a big number. If you were getting a check that size, it would be a big number. So in terms of investing money against it, that's a decision that I think you're going to have to make case by case, depending on what your goal is. I think at the scale of our business and the clients that we're working with, those kinds of investments I'm advocating. Because I feel like when this channel goes prime time, and I feel like that's in the near future finally, it's going to be more difficult to build the internal machinery to service the channel instantly than they think. And so that's why I'm saying 32% represents today. And so today let's build a machine so that when it's 50% or 70%, we're able to integrate it into the marketing mix. Does that answer your question? Yes, sir.
Regarding monetization, how are they approaching that in Europe at this point?
They're asking us.
Really? But they're advertising there, right?
The European companies advertising on mobile in the U.S.?
No, in Europe, because I know that like WAP and all that sort of stuff is more populated there.
There is a higher use of mobile in life in general in Europe. There are better networks. Their handsets are more robust, more feature sets, and better content. But what's been amazing to me is our company has grown internationally over the course of 2006. We acquired 7 agencies, I think, around the world. I fully expected to be able to start calling the guys in Hong Kong and London and Hamburg and saying, "Awesome, dude! Tell me what you're doing with mobile, so we can get started here." And in fact, their answers were, we were kind of hoping you guys in the U.S. would tell us because we don't really, you guys are more advanced in the U.S. with advertising for the mobile channel than even we are, which is especially striking to consider that 32% number. Yes, sir.
Hi. I run a couple of websites and we do... broadband video on demand, music content mostly. We are looking to make a mobile play with our streaming video, and I kind of see a chicken and egg problem developing where we don't really have the bandwidth and infrastructure to deliver a good streaming video on mobile devices. And I'm wondering if you can see a resolution for that chicken and egg problem, or is it going to keep being this thing like, people don't want to watch video because it doesn't look any good, so we're not going to build out the network, and we don't ever get out of that cycle.
I think it's a great question. And I have to be brief because I've just hit the 2-minute warning. There's a couple of things. Again, scale always has to be considered when you have these kind of conversations. So for an entrepreneurial or a small niche content producer, I think there are a lot of challenges because there's the walled garden mentality of the carrier standing in your way. There's overall kind of infrastructure and technology issues. There's cross-coding issues, how to serve video in the right way for 900 plus handsets across four different networks. That I think is going to shake out as a result of movements by larger players such as MediaFlow. And I'm excited that MediaFlow is launched with Verizon as of this year, has recently cut a deal with AT&T as well. And for those of you who don't know MediaFlow, they are a gigantically funded broadband video delivery services company backed by Qualcomm kind of exclusively that is ready to kind of turn on the Death Star of digital video delivery in the U.S. And I think they're slowly putting the pieces together that when that network goes live in a meaningful way for consumers, which I believe is going to be in the first and second quarter of next year, some of those challenges for big media companies are going to go away instantly because it's going to perform exactly like the current head-end satellite relay networks that we have for television. It'll probably take some time for that to trickle down to the level where there's APIs and opt-in content distribution networks that will play nicely there. And it certainly will take those companies, will take their time squeezing every nickel out of their ownership of it prior to that. Still, I would say that even that may only be 18 months away. Thank you guys very much for coming out on a wet afternoon. Appreciate it.